Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What's happening? I am Mark Maron. This is my show. WTF, thank you for joining. Thank you for being here. Thank you for wherever you may be. I appreciate your patronage and allowing me to be in your head, right? Just me and you. Before I do forget to plug myself, you can still get my special More Later as a digital download for a special price. It's available exclusively at WTFpod.com for another week, and it's only $7.99 before it goes to iTunes next month. Go to WTFpod.com. There's a link right on the homepage under today's episode, as well as in the merch section. Also, get tickets for my Carnegie Hall dates. They're at, you can go to nycomedyfestival.com. That's the New York Comedy Festival, November 4th. I will be performing at Carnegie Hall. I will be at the Albuquerque Journal Theater, September 3rd. There's not many tickets left for this hometown show, but you can go to WTFpod.com/tour to check out, where to get those tickets. I'll be at the Comedy Club in Rochester, New York, September 9th and September 10th. You can get tickets for that. Again, WTFpod.com/tour for those Rochester dates. The Wilbur in Boston, September 24th. The Vic Theater, December 3rd in Chicago. Today on the show, God Amala. I hope I'm pronouncing God Amala. He's a French comic. And he's a Moroccan Jew, and he's somebody that a lot of people in this country have not heard of, but he's an international superstar. It's one of those situations where it's like, what? And I was happy to meet him. I never know what to expect. And he has been in the country here in the United States a couple of times in the recent past. Actually, he's a native French speaker. And he's doing his act in English. And it was very interesting to watch somebody, actually trying to do a completely English act and not being an English speaker. It was impressive because the sort of skills you have to rely on comedically sort of shift from what you're used to. And I had a lot of respect for the guy and had a great time talking to him. First time I've had a French person on the show, and the first time I've met a Moroccan Jew. So there was a lot of new things. A lot of firsts. Yeah, so I'd gotten estranged from my buddy Mike. Sometimes things get difficult. He needed a couple bucks a while back. I gave him a couple bucks, and I didn't hear from him. And then we got weird, and then things got weirder. And then you get to the point where you don't know what's really happening. And I didn't know where he was at or where I was at. And then this was the fucking thing, man. Your life should never be at a point, if possible, where you see somebody that you were friends with out in the world and you avert your face and hope that you don't see him, that he don't see you, you don't see him or her or whoever, that you don't want to deal. I mean, life's too fucking short to have that shit out in the world when sometimes, all it takes is just to, sit down and face the fire. What's up? What is up? Where are we at? How can we make this right? So that happened, man. A couple of weeks ago, I saw him and I was like, oh, God. And he didn't see me and I was relieved. But right after that, I'm like, this is bullshit. I didn't get sober to have fucking weird bullshit out in the world with people. And as often as I talk to people here, face to face, I don't always know these people. And a lot of times when I work through problems here, they're one-time things that just, kind of stick in my craw or stick in their craw, and they become like a dark dark pearl of resentment. Nothing shiny about the dark pearls of resentment that kind of stick there under the fine emotional membrane of your heart. And over time, you know, the membrane just keeps rubbing on it, and it just takes on this weird kind of sucking luster, the black pearl of resentment. The problem was that, there was unresolved business between me and my buddy. And I said, what the fuck is up? Which is not the best way. That's not a great opening salvo to what should be an apology or a resolution. But I was like, I was defensive. So I was prickly and he was prickly, and we went back and forth, and it didn't seem like we were going to get closure. And then it was finally like, fuck it, dude. Let's get in it, man. Let's just fucking have coffee and deal with this shit. It was really simple. It was fucking just misunderstandings, misunderstanding and assumptions. You know, he thought I was mad that he wasn't paying me back a few bucks. And I thought, he was, ignoring me because he didn't want to. And then there was other shit involved. There were just layers of shit. And all that got compounded by the fact that neither one of us were talking to each other over a meaningless sum of money. And it just was fucking stupid. And then when we got together within minutes, it was like, oh, fuck. What a relief. And then we kind of went point for point and worked through shit. And, we hugged it out. And, we're back on track. We're friends again. And it was like my entire life became better. Some things they just, you don't realize. They take precedent, over, how you're looking at your world. They buckle and constrict your perception because it's unresolved and it's hurting your fucking heart. Fucking clear that shit up if you can, because now we're good. And it's just, it wasn't that hard because we both thought things that were untrue. You make these decisions in your mind about people. I do it all the fucking time. 99% of the time when someone comes into this garage just to talk, I have an idea of who they are, and I'm always amazed because it's always never that idea, and it's always much more. And a lot of times when you got a beef with somebody, you've made a decision to sort of just fuel your goddamn contempt or your resentment or your judgment. And the decision is based on nothing other than your own fucking anger. Got no bearing on reality. There is a reality there. It may have started with something, but what blossoms from that is just bullshit. It's just malignant imagination, running away with you, and that will ruin your entire fucking day or week or life. Okay, so been exercising, been doing what I got to do to try to have a good last part of my life. That sounds dark. It's just funny. Yeah, how we push ourselves and how in our mind, and I've talked about this on stage before to some degree, just that, I don't really sense that I'm getting older. I don't really sense in a real way. I still think that I'm in the best shape I've ever been in, and I might be. But I was in Phoenix a few days ago, as I told you, and me and Ryan hiked up Camelback. It's 105 degrees out. You got to go up there before like 7 in the morning. And, I've done it many times before because I've been to Phoenix. My first wife was from there. My brother lives there. But Camelback Mountain's a nice little hike. It's about an hour up, about an hour down. But it's you go up and you get, it gets scary because people have been dropping dead up there. And they actually closed the mountain because there was 3 or 4 cases of extreme heat stroke. I had water and we got lucky. It wasn't that hot out. But, I'm a 52-year-old dude. And I'm fucking, climbing up this mountain. I got to stop because a couple of times because my heart was pounding out of my chest and it was hot and the sweat started to come. And, we made it. Ryan and I made it up. My brother made it up. His stepdaughter, Brooke, made it up. And, there we were, and I'm heading down. And, You start to realize your age, and you start to say I got to be a little more careful, and because we just think we can do things. And there was just this weird, beautiful, gross Buddha moment where I saw a dude. I'm coming down. I saw a dude with some other dudes who looked like he was about my age, and he was on his knees on the ground puking his guts out. And this was me. I'm not even halfway up the hill. I felt bad for him. I hope he was all right. But the other dudes were like, come on, let's just go back down. He's like, no, no, no. He gets up. He wipes his mouth. I'm all right. It's just all that fucking fish oil I've been taking in the morning. So I don't know why to me that was revelatory, but it's just that, you know, this weird, you know, desperate place we get at a certain age where you're like, man, I got to take these vitamins. I got to get that exercise in. I got to, you know, you just, your whole life is built around maintaining these performance levels or staying healthy. And there he was, couldn't even make a quarter up the hill, and he's puking up vitamins. I don't know. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it means anything, but to me, it stood out as sort of like, hey, man, maybe we should take it easy. Just, you know, let's not go too hard, man. We've made it this far. Let's not hurt ourselves trying to be 25 or trying to think that, you know, we have to do this thing out of pride. You know, this exercise is pushing ourselves to the limit. Maybe it's time to just stay in shape the best we can without hurting ourselves and enjoy fucking life and not throw up fish oil vitamins a quarter of the way up a mountain. Maybe that's it. Not judging that guy. I related to him. So Guatemala. All right. He's got a bunch of shows here. This, as I told you before, he's a French comic, internationally huge. And I didn't know him until I met him here at Largo, and he charmed me, and I liked him, and I was curious about his journey to do an act in English as a French speaker, and I got a lot more. I really had a nice conversation with the guy. He's got like 8 big shows here in the U.S. and Canada starting next week in Boston. He'll be here in L.A. on September 9th. You can go to his website, guatemala.com. That's GADELMALEH.com for tour dates and tickets. And this is me and God, having a good time, having a nice talk. He's a charming, funny guy. And he's a Moroccan Jew. I never met a Moroccan Jew before.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Gad El Male. El Male.
ELMALEH. El Male.
El Male.
You know what? Every night the hosts in clubs, they come in panic. I'm sorry, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's your first name? What's your last name?
It's a problem, you know, because like we're not used to the strange names here.
Yeah, strange. Yeah. yeah. But when Trump is going to be president, you're going to get
even less of you.
Yeah. No, no, more.
Oh, yeah.
We have a plan.
Oh, you do? Good. But I saw you at Largo. You know, you've got friends in the American comedy world, Gottfried, bothering me. You got to get Gad on. I'm like, I don't know who this guy is.
Gottfried.
So then, I do a little research, and it's very fragmented, the research I do. You know, I'm like, who is this guy? And he's like, well, you know, Jerry's his friend, and you brought him over. And I'm like, what do you mean Jerry brought him over? Seinfeld brought him over.
Like I was adopted.
Like, yeah, right? Like, yeah. It's like he decides, well, I knew what happened. You know, this happens occasionally. You know, big stars here, they go around the world. And all of a sudden, they're like, "Oh my God! You know, there's whole popular people that I know nothing about."
Yeah,
and he seems to be a professional of some kind. Maybe he'd enjoy America. But you were here before?
No. I just started to do stand up in English. But this, you know what? This happens. I talk about that in my show. But this happens really often. Sometimes I'm with some American friends and French people, they recognize me, you know,
right
on the street, in a bar, and they freak out because French people get so excited, and it's good for girls, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But
they're excited to see you because they know you. I mean, that's happened. You know, we have Russell Peters, who none of us know, as an American star, but all we hear about is Russell Peters. Like everywhere else in the world, yeah. He's the biggest comedian.
But
in
not
the world.
Here, also here. No, I think yeah, people know him.
They know him, but not like that.
They don't know me
at all.
At all.
Well, they
can't even say my name.
But that, right, because now you like you, well, you know, there's a language barrier.
No, not anymore.
But this is new, is what I'm saying. Is
yeah,
it new?
Because I worked so hard to learn English.
Well, I saw that, and I like it was interesting when I saw you at Largo because I know that you're now you know in internationally you speak French because in other countries people speak more than one language.
Yeah,
like especially in France, but you go other places. You're big in other places,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, in Europe and North Africa and Middle East.
North Africa. Now you used to do
because
French.
I was born in Morocco, raised in Morocco,
but it's still French.
First language is Arabic, obviously, Moroccan Arabic. Because
you speak Moroccan Arabic?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Don't, yeah. You say that like, you know, of course we speak
okay,
nine,
I grew up
nine
there.
Languages.
No, I mean, I grew up there, you know, and because I grew up in a Jewish Moroccan family, I also speak Hebrew.
So you speak Hebrew?
Yeah, Arabic.
Arabic, French, now English. English was the last,
and
the final frontier.
Italian, a little Italian, yeah.
But a little Italian because it's also a romantic language and it's some similarities?
You got it.
But the Arabic and English, Arabic and Hebrew, I imagine, some similarities?
Very similar, very similar.
So once you get the knack for that, if you got the brain that was wired that way when you were a kid, you kind of pick that shit up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But English is the hardest one, right?
English is hard. You have no idea.
I can't imagine.
It's
I barely
hard.
Speak. I don't speak it well.
And I know.
I have a hard time with it.
Yeah.
I don't know what a lot of things mean. I use words wrong. It's ridiculous.
I mean, expressions. And sometimes you guys have things that you think are so logic and normal. For us, we learn. Okay, this weekend, I was talking to a girl by text. I said, let's go for dinner. She said, I'm down.
Yeah.
I swear, Mark, I swear
like,
she
matter?
Was depressed. I'm like, okay, so let's do that some other, I don't know, another day. She said, no, why? I said, if you're down, I respect, I'll wait. Yeah. I said, no, I'm totally up for it.
Yeah.
So
now you think you've got a depressed girl that's going to be fighting her depression that you're going to hang out
yeah,
with.
Yeah, I don't want to hang out with a depressed girl who's totally down for it.
Well, you said something else in the act, too, about the I'm good thing, which is very funny. It had a nice long English bit with a callback. It was very good. It was impressive. You're excited about the word fuss. I mean, I understood all that, but I found myself watching you thinking, like, I'd like to see this guy in French because I bet you it's just, like, crazy. Like, just because when I saw you get animated, I'm like, well, he does a big act somewhere. Because, like, American stand-up is sort of specific. And, you know, and you're dealing with the language and you're dealing with the timing and it's going very well. But it seems like that you're a lot more mobile, you know.
In France, in Europe. Yeah. That's right. You got it. It's right.
But let's talk about how one comes up in comedy coming from Morocco. See, I'd like to go to Morocco.
You should go. I should take you to Morocco.
But is it okay?
And by the way, the Morocco.
Is it okay? My parents are. Everyone's very afraid. Don't travel now.
Come
you can't
on.
Travel
it's safe.
Now.
It's safer than some places in Europe. Come
yeah.
On. Yeah. Yeah. No. They really protect people who come visit. And by the way, the stand-up scene in Morocco is getting very, very.
Isn't that what? Good?
Good. Great. What do you mean? People do comedy all around the world. Now
that's relatively new.
No.
Yes.
No. Come on. Comedy has been, you know.
Stand-up or some sort of weird. see, different. Sure. Yeah. There's been funny things.
I know, guys. You
time.
Have this idea of us in Europe and Maghreb and North Africa doing comedy with, I don't know, props.
Not
and,
props.
And
just very broad.
Birds. And
broad.
Jerry always make fun of me. He say, "Oh, I'm sure you do some mime things with the rope, uh-huh. and you bring someone." Imagine.
No, I don't think that.
No.
But I think that there is a physicality.
No, you're right.
To in other countries that is different. You know, you know, American stand-up is sort of a thinky individual, you know, kind of like singular person.
Yeah, but I like it. I like to mix those two things.
Well,
really.
you're just
because the only dry standing up telling jokes, very serious, very
yeah.
It's not my thing, and only moving around and dancing and doing a body language thing is not my thing.
Like, yeah, I just know that in Montreal, they have, for 2 weeks, they have the French comedy thing, and I'm like, what is that? It's just a lot of people going, walking around with their hands up, making funny faces. You know what I'm like?
I want you to come to Paris and say that. I'm going to take you.
What?
They're going to hate you forever. I want to take you.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm judging. Maybe I was being a little...
No. Okay. By the way, it's a funny example.
Yeah.
For a bit, I think you could do that as a bit. That would be a funny bit. Maybe you already have it in your act. But if you take the very specific Montreal, Quebec example, they do stand-up in French that looks really, really like English stand-up. They're North American.
Right.
Only the language right. changes.
Right.
We in France do something more theatrical, yeah. right? Very act out.
Yeah.
And the body language yeah, and the I like music. It.
Yeah.
And the,
music.
The yeah. lights.
Well, let's go back to your childhood. So, because what I learned and what made me interested in talking to you is that I found that backstage at Largo, when we were talking, that you're just this insecure Jewish guy from Morocco who speaks French. And I'm like, I understand that. Like,
that's a good start for comedy, no?
Yeah, it is. But I didn't know that when I first saw you in New York. I'm like, who the hell does this guy think he is, Mr. Suave? And then, like, I was like, I talked to you for 5 minutes. I'm like, oh, he's a comedian. The guy's just a comedian, a Jewish comedian like me.
That's funny because that's when I heard about you and I meet you today. Yeah. It's the opposite.
Uh-huh.
All what I thought before is true.
Oh yeah,
was yeah.
Which is good or
bad.
I
don't know, the lonely man, the garage yeah, thing, the yeah, crazy, yeah. everything.
That's
it's
true.
It's true.
Someone told you otherwise?
No surprise. They talk about it in France also.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This? They talk about this?
Yeah.
Oh, good. But, like, how do you, like, I don't understand. See, like, it's new to me that I know there are Persian Jews, I know there are Iraqi Jews, and now I know there are...
What is Iraqi Jews?
Iraqi.
Oh, Iraqi. Yeah. I heard Rocky.
They're, you know, Moroccan Jews, like... That community seems to, like, I don't, you know, all I understand from my life experience is sort of middle class Jewish shit. Like, you know, so, you know, American middle class Jew stuff.
Yeah.
You know, third generation, second generation, it's American. But this fascinates me. So, because you did an impression, it's funny because you did an impression of your Jewish mother on stage in English that was a little different than the classic Jewish mother here, but the French understood it.
Yeah.
There's a French Jewish mother, apparently.
But this is a new perspective that I want to bring here.
Yeah.
Because Sephardic Jew, which uh-huh. is so different than Ashkenaz, and in Morocco, obviously, we're Sephardic.
Mm-hmm.
Sephardic.
Which means Arabic-based, kind of.
I mean, the word Sephard in Hebrew means Spain, because right. Sephardics are from Spain, obviously, mm-hmm. and they were... kicked out by yeah. Isabel the Catholic.
Sure, during the big thing.
Inquisition,
yeah.
So Sephardic Jews it's a great story. It's a great history between the two communities. By the way, it's one of the only place on earth where two people, Muslims and Jews, uh-huh. lived in really good harmony for decades. You
where
know?
In Spain?
In Morocco,
oh, yeah,
in
Morocco.
Casablanca.
Oh, yeah.
They had the Jewish neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
It was very very like a peace, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you brought something interesting because the cliche that you guys have and use in the American comedy of the Jewish mother
yeah.
has nothing to do with our Jewish mother,
right.
which is so... I mean, the Jewish mother here in America is not sexy.
Uh-huh.
Our Jewish mother...
You haven't met my mom. She's very, very sexy. I have a very specific... Like, I did relate to the experiences. Like, I almost bought you a cookie. That bit.
Yeah, but selfish. Like
right, selfish. There you go.
A little selfish.
Oh,
right?
No, that's that travels.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, completely
like
self-involved.
It's my thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if I do something good for you,
yeah.
it's because it's me.
It's
you know?
For me.
It's for me. Look what, you know?
Look how great I am. I did the good thing for you.
Like my mother with my son, the
yeah.
little one.
Yeah.
If there's no audience, yeah. family, friends, she would be okay with my little one, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as there are people,
yeah.
like friends,
yeah.
and
then she puts on a show.
Oh,
yeah,
she's
yeah.
the best grandma.
Right. But alone,
ever.
She's a little selfish.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Exactly.
When they leave the house, it's like, okay, I'm tired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my mom's a little more like that. I guess the classic Jewish mother stereotype here is the overbearing, smothering, you know, eat some more, you know.
No.
No, my
she
mom.
She doesn't cook.
No.
My mother doesn't cook.
Mine neither. She barely
really?
Eats.
They should meet.
They should. Completely vain and worried about her looks but doesn't eat much. Terrible cook.
You know what she did? She did something crazy. My sister was traumatized. The day of my sister's wedding,
mm-hmm.
my sister was getting ready in the hotel room.
Yeah.
So my mom, she knocked at the door. My sister opened the door and my mom looked at my sister and asked her, how do I look?
Yeah.
My sister was traumatized.
Really?
She talks about it every week.
It's all about your mother.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
The wedding day.
Yeah.
Then she divorced.
Did she? The sister?
Yeah. Not because of that. Yeah. You know.
But your parents are still together?
Yeah. 50 years.
Uh-huh.
I would not like to be with someone for 50 years.
How about your mother? You stuck with her.
She said a great line last summer, very cute. I took them to Capri.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy. Now I feel I have to explain, you know.
Yeah, it's the beach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sea, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's by the ocean.
Flip-flops, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That kind of thing.
I see romanticism and Mark sees flip-flops and
no,
shorts.
No, it's beautiful. Everything in Europe is beautiful.
Everything.
It's all, yeah.
So I take
beautiful.
Them to Capri, you know. And we have this big party with all the family and the grandkids and the kids and everyone. We're in a club dancing and mm-hmm. she looks at me and she said, you know what? Only for this moment that I'm having right now with you, it was worth to stay 50 years with this man. And I think
they get an understanding. You know, they get a pattern. You know, yeah. these married couples that you think are crazy. They're both crazy, but somehow or another
they know.
They talk a lot about this or that, but they still together. You know what I mean? But like, so how many people in this family of yours? You got a sister,
three kids. My sister is a writer in France. She works for TV.
Uh-huh.
My younger brother is an actor, pretty serious actor.
Oh yeah,
and theater and plays.
All arts.
Yeah, my father was a mime.
Really?
Which is
a Moroccan mime.
I mean, this is funny. But
is he? Was he really?
I swear.
Because you know you're French,
even that
right?
phrase. My father was a mime is a funny one. If you add my father was a mime in Morocco, it's even funnier.
But like here you were like, you know, like poo-pooing the idea that like we have this weird judgment of French comedy. Like Jerry saying, do you do the rope? Do you do the wind? Are you in a box? And then with all sincerity, you tell me your father's a mime. And like, we're the assholes? You think we're going like, it's obviously a job in show business that people do there. You know, no one ever in America goes like, I'm going to go into mime. But clearly... It's something that happens over there. It's not some weird stereotype.
Marcel Marceau.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Marcel Marceau?
Of course. He's the one guy.
He's the one guy who teach to Michael Jackson how to moonwalk.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh.
And my father was a big fan of Marcel Marceau.
Yeah.
And he was a mime. He did that as a hobby, right? Like in private things,
as a hobby.
Clubs. Hobby.
Not
hobby.
A professional mime.
Nah. How could he be a professional mime in Morocco? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know the landscape there. I don't know what a night out is in Morocco.
And first time I went on stage in my life was with my father. I was presenting his routine, you know, with the board and doing
the Oh, you're the guy that walked out that said the wind. No talking, but just written
mime.
On it.
Yeah. Written on it.
Did you? What kind of outfit?
Two men in a restaurant want to kill each other. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, right. Got it. So that was your first experience in show business, carrying signs for your father so people would have some context for what he was about to do.
Yeah, he would have. Some comedians should put that sometimes before a joke.
So you know at the beginning?
Yeah.
Doesn't take 10
the setup,
minutes?
Yeah. The setup. Yeah, the setup. Yeah. Quick setup, please. Yeah. Get to the point.
Right, or a segue, you know.
Segue, I like that.
Yeah, but that's interesting to me. So, you know, he loved Marcel Marceau. So I guess mime was actually very popular, and I think that Marcel Marceau popularized it, like, obviously, over there. And I got, what is the, so but he didn't do it professionally.
No, it was, you know.
A hobby.
I think he would have loved to be a professional mime, but it was hard. You
was
know?
He good at it?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah?
He was the only one.
The only one in Morocco?
Yeah.
He had the market cornered.
I mean.
Looking for a mime?
There was not another mime. He was the mime.
Mm-hmm.
The mime of Morocco. Now we have a very important comedy festival in Marrakesh.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, I was just talking to this.
Did you play it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because you're the guy.
Yeah,
you made it out.
Yeah, of course they're proud. You know,
what and do they do? What kind?
They bring all the French comedians because obviously everyone talks French in Morocco because Morocco was colonized by France.
Right.
You know,
right.
And also they bring Moroccan comedians, obviously, and Jamel Debbouze, who is the biggest comedian. And he's Moroccan, but he's maybe the second biggest comedian in France.
Really? What's his name?
Jamel.
Mm-hmm.
Debbouze.
I think I've seen him.
Yeah. I was talking this morning about what I was going to do here, and he says, But podcast, we don't have this in France. Mm-hmm. We don't care about podcast.
I think you probably, you might, I guess not. Well, you don't care about a lot of things, right?
I don't care. I don't care about that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's very funny though, like the way you characterize, like I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, by doing your act in English, you know, you're speaking to, I guess probably about a third of the audience were French people living here. And, you know, by choosing to do it in English, you kind of make it a more personal experience for people who are French who live here, because you're talking about being French, learning English and dealing with America.
Yeah,
as opposed to just come out and do the French act, that would have made them all happy. But I think you spoke directly to their experience as expatriates, right?
That's a very good point, because it's true. Obviously, I do the show in English and a lot of Americans are in the room, but yeah, the expats, as you say, relate really strongly to the frustration they feel with Americans and how with the language and some habits. And yeah, you're right. I do this because it's a mixed crowd, but when I go to like where we met at the Cellar, for example, in New York City, I do only bits that could be understood only by Americans, obviously.
And that's a pretty international club in a weird way. It used to be more so. You know, like they get a lot of people from all over.
Oh, yeah, I feel so. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. I saw comedians from South Africa, from Europe, from Middle East. And it's great. It's great.
So when you started out in Morocco, you're just a Jewish kid from Morocco, and you got obviously parents that are very supportive of doing the arts.
Yeah.
They encourage it. Mm-hmm. What is your father's business outside of doing a mime as a hobby?
Nothing special. He worked here and there as an employee in many things, in restaurants, real estate, whatever. He was just trying to
hustler.
How do you call it?
A hustler, making his meat.
Yeah.
A lot of different things.
Hustler.
Yeah.
It's a store on Sunset.
Right. That's the skin mag. That's a dirty mag. It's a Hustler Industries was built on Hustler Magazine, which was pussies and, you know, and tits.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So my father was not working in that. No.
And Hustler is also as a slang
hustle.
A male prostitute. But somebody who...
We're going to get to my father's job.
Like a guy who's like, you know, he does a lot of things and he's figuring out the angle, you know, to make some money.
He tries at the end of the month, then to bring food for the family.
Right, that's it. So that's a fine way to use it, but I'd be careful using it in conversation.
No, I won't. Now I understand.
Like, yeah, because if you were just with your broken English and say, my dad was a hustler, they'd be like, really? That sounds sad. You know, so he was a male prostitute? And you're like, no, the other guy. Yeah. But, all right, so you grow up in this environment, but like I know from being an American comic, you know, we stand-up comedy is, you know, part of the fabric of our entertainment industry, and it's very specific. And there's a sort of a way to go about it. Like I like Richard Pryor, I like Woody Allen, whatever you go. How do I do that? And then some people figure it out. Now it's a little easier to figure it out. But as a kid in Morocco, you know, what inspires you to do this thing?
That's funny because I have the same models, I would say, when you talk about
role models,
role models, Woody Allen and Richard Pryor and. Even the more recently, Jerry Seinfeld. And
you're seeing these guys?
Yeah.
When you're younger?
Not younger, because I didn't speak English, but I, you know, I've seen French comics, Moroccan comics, when I was young.
Like on TV?
So we didn't have, because in Morocco, when I was young, we had just one channel.
As an American, you're like, oh my God, how did you survive?
We had one channel and didn't work during the day. No, I'm not kidding.
It's I believe like you.
I'm we not, would come back from school, do the homework, blah, 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 on only the weekends. Mm-hmm. And we would watch Dallas, the series.
Right.
Dallas with South Fork Ranch, Bobby Ewing. By the way, they would cut all the scenes where they kiss or touch or whatever. So Dallas in Morocco was taking place basically in an office all the time. No drinking. No. JR, you know when JR had his bottle?
Yeah.
He would go toward the bottle, cut, boom, he's in the office.
And that was why, religious reasons?
No, really, like his little censored, you know? Mm-hmm. So
for what reason? The why censor?
You know, the kiss and the, you know, like... So it was really funny, you know, just to, but I didn't know that.
You just thought that these people.
I thought they were working really hard and I never get to the glass of the
never kiss anybody.
Never kiss anybody.
No one sleeps with each
so
other.
So then we didn't understand why they would fight, because they don't see when they kiss, and it was really interesting. But the business part of it was really, really strong, intense,
It was oil, right?
It was oil. So we were all about oil. We were focused on, it was a serial about oil.
Yeah.
Only
that's
oil.
It. That's
and
it.
Horses.
And people that never quite made it to the drink or the bedroom.
Never. And horses. They would ride horses and do business.
So you didn't really get the full experience.
The cleanest series on earth.
That was maybe a little peculiar because it didn't quite make sense. Right.
Yeah, and it was on Friday.
Right.
So it's a whole, it's all messed up because Friday was Shabbat also.
Yeah.
In Morocco.
You live religious?
No, but tradition, we would do Shabbat at home and...
Was it a Jewish neighborhood, a Jewish community,
no,
a Jewish area?
No. There's a Jewish community who get really along, as I told you, with the Muslims.
Yeah.
And, they know about Jewish community. We know about Muslims. And we had a really great relationship. So
you watch in Dallas. And
yeah,
then
Dallas.
What else?
And
one station.
What? So the channel, the TV would start around, I think, 6 p.m.,
yeah,
not before.
Right.
And then something happened crazy. I was maybe 12. And a private second channel came and wow,
like
it was like the revolution.
Like cable?
Cable, not cable, but the second one, private.
Yeah, right, new.
But we had those
private as opposed to what, state? Like, or as opposed to like one channel was run by the government? Or,
yeah, and the other one was more
an entrepreneur, like some guy started a TV channel. Okay. Yeah.
But we would watch French shows, mm-hmm, obviously, entertainment show, mm-hmm, talk shows from France on a cassette.
Video cassette?
Video cassette, yeah, like older cassette from France, right?
Right.
So family who moved to France many years before would send us by someone the talk show of this famous, I don't know, host and some comedians were on the show. But because, it was rare, we would get one cassette every 2 months.
And they'd be dated, old stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Old material. Mm. But also I would watch the cassette every night.
With the comedian.
After school, because with comedians. So this guy, Thierry Leluron, big French comedian, he would do only impressions of politicians and artists and performers, singers. I was amazed by that. I was really impressed. So I was watching this, and the first movie I've seen, I was maybe 6 years old, in the cinema with my father, was The Kid, Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. And people would smoke
in the
movie theater, and no kids. I was there with my father, and I saw The Kid.
Yeah.
It was a shock.
With Jackie Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the little kid.
Big shock.
Yeah. Why was it a shock?
Because I wanted to be that kid.
Oh, yeah.
And... It was great.
You wanted to be in the movies.
Yeah, I wanted to be in a movie. You know what they used to do in movie theaters in Morocco? They would take the film.
Yeah.
And a guy with a bike would go and deliver the film.
The reel, yeah.
How you call
the
it?
The reel.
The reel
yeah.
to another movie theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one day I was in a movie theater and we were waiting for the film.
Yeah.
And the guy said, he come on the set, he said, I'm sorry, the guy with... The
real.
He fell with the bike.
Movie. Yeah,
the movie. So we're just fixing now.
So you had to wait.
And we're gonna bring. Don't worry. We're gonna bring that.
Is that how you saw movies when you were a kid? Do you go to these theaters?
Well, I went. Well, not a lot because we didn't have enough money to go all the time.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm now old? 45. I just turned 45.
So you really in a way, it seems just in relative to what we're used to entertainment wise, a little bit primitive.
Oh, totally.
And it's not that long ago.
No, totally. And then I moved to Canada. I stayed 4 years in Quebec, in Montreal.
What, for school?
School, yeah. I studied a little
bit. So your experience as a kid, so you liked the Charlie Chaplin movie and you liked this French impressionist. So, but, as a child, you did not see Woody Allen movie. You didn't see...
No, I discovered Woody Allen. I was maybe... I was 15, 16,
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you saw it. So, but you wanted to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
And at this time...
More than an actor.
Right. But you like the comedians.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, because they, it's a very specific job. You know what I mean? So you got to make them laugh. You gotta, it's a very specific thing.
And you got to get something from them right now. It's not just.
Right. And you can also be yourself to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you can tell your story and you can be yourself, which is better than, you know.
Pretending to be somebody.
I did movies in France. I did also some movies here in America. But to be very honest, I get really, sometimes I get bored.
Yeah.
I get.
You're waiting around a lot when you do TV.
I wait and I don't know. I don't want to play this guy named, I don't know, Frederick. He's a dentist. I don't believe. I don't believe in that. He's just divorced and he has a dog. I don't like dogs and I have to deal with the dog.
It doesn't sound like acting's your thing.
No. I like to kiss a very beautiful girl.
Yeah, well, that's probably because it was denied to you by Dallas when you were a young kid. You're like, I just want to.
That's a good callback. You got it.
But so what are you doing as a kid? Are you playing instruments? What do you play?
I would play percussion and piano.
Moroccan drums?
Yeah, Moroccan drums called darbuka, but also drums, guitar, and piano. Piano was my thing. I thought, when I was a kid, I would play music every day, and I thought I was going to become a pianist.
Oh, yeah? Like classical?
No, jazz music.
Oh, yeah?
I'm a very, very, very big jazz fan.
So was your dad into jazz? Where'd you start?
No, he plays a little piano, but I was listening to jazz all the time at home. Back in the day was my father's stuff, like Louis Armstrong and and Didi Bridgewater and the singers more.
Yeah.
And then when I traveled and I played and I went to concerts and travel, I discovered the other, from Brad Meldo today to Chick Corea and Ahmad Jamal. And
you like that stuff?
Oh yeah, jazz music. I love to go to festivals. I love jazz music. This is the only thing that I can do all by myself. I could go to a jazz concert in a city I don't know. I can fly there.
Yeah,
jazz and comedy.
Yeah,
I can go see comedy, stand up.
Yeah,
like when I land New York, LA, whatever, Boston.
Yeah,
I go by myself. I need a beer.
Yeah,
and time.
Yeah, and watch some stand up.
Not even money.
Jazz.
They let me.
Yeah.
Get in for free.
Yeah, because you're a guy.
You're a comic.
Yeah, you're a comic.
Are you a comic?
Yeah, come on in. You want a soda?
Yeah.
Get you a drink.
How much is that? Oh, no, you're a comic.
Come
on. I like that.
Just sit back there.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, me too. So
you know, the first time they gave me money in a club in New York, I felt something very, very strange. Because obviously we make money by doing movies.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel what I felt. I mean, I didn't feel when they wired me money for a movie.
Yeah.
I didn't feel what I felt when they pumped me those 30 bucks.
Yeah, here's the 30 bucks for
I
your 10
loved
minutes.
It.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, and that was in New York?
Yeah.
But recently?
Recently.
Oh, but you get paid to do big shows, but you got like a manager and you don't see the money until later, but just the sort of like, you just were up there, here's your $20.
Yeah.
I earned that.
I like that.
Oh yeah, it's great. The first time you get paid in a comedy
club. The only
club,
thing is they make me sign something. I would love to have just the money and the handshake.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, it used to be that way. Then the clubs are sort of like, well, the tax people, they need some proof.
I would prefer like, you know what, I'll pay you tomorrow, I can't tonight.
Right.
That would make it so real.
Oh, you should have started here. That would have happened a lot.
You should have struggled here.
Yeah. You do gigs and the guy, you do a week and the guy's like, hey, I'm a little short this week.
Have a drink.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's
we'll send you the check. There are guys that have stories about guys that didn't pay him 20 years ago.
Oh my God.
So how do you start doing shows? I mean, do you start as a, like, it's interesting about jazz is jazz has a much bigger life in Europe.
Yeah.
That's really where jazz lives as a popular medium. Like, you know, it just seems like a lot of jazz musicians end up, spend a lot of time in France.
In Paris,
like, hey,
they
get it here.
Saint-Germain, there's a whole school, if I may say that. Yeah, for jazz music, but not for stand-up.
No, but what's the evolution of you as a performer? Where do you start performing? What do you start doing?
So I started to perform in a little bit in Montreal when I lived in Montreal.
Were you going to college?
The college, yeah. I went to college.
In Montreal?
Yeah, in Montreal. And I started to study at the University of Montreal political science.
Mm-hmm. What was the plan?
Comedy. Right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they say
you got to tell your parents something.
That's the right place.
Yeah.
And I was watching those guys who you made fun of But those guys are great because they're from Montreal and they do comedy, they do stand-up. And I was watching them.
This is French.
Yeah, this is where I said, oh, wow, they do stand-up comedy like my idols, like Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock and this and that. But in French, I'm going to bring that to Europe, to France. So then I moved to France. I went to the acting school.
After college.
After college. And then, you know, I was 20 years old and I quickly started to write some things. And we don't have clubs in France. We have one now, what we didn't have back in the day. We didn't have clubs. So here you can work out the material 10 minutes by 10 minutes. No, there you had to have like 1 hour, 1 hour, 15, 1 hour, 30. They don't know you. You have to bring the family. You have to bring TV. You have to bring everyone. And you do an okay show. And then the show gets better by the time, you know.
That's how it works in France? But did you do...
I prefer how it works here.
Sure.
Because if you have an hour or an hour, 30 minutes, it's only good stuff.
That's right. You got to do it in sections and you know, you go out every night. It's like going to the gym.
Exactly.
Whereas in Europe, it's sort of, you got to show up with the hour.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Or if it's not great, they're a little more forgiving. Like, you know, I noticed that like even in, like they'll give you a little more leeway.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like if you go to Edinburgh,
Oh yeah.
I you see these performers, they come every year with a new hour, but it's not punchline.
No.
It's sort of like, wow, this is it? This is it? Like, yeah, you know. I guess getting the laugh every 30, 40 seconds is not that important here, you know. Yeah. But there's some guys, like some British comics, that are very punchline efficient. But I noticed that, you know, you show up with the show, there's different expectation.
Yeah. They're in a kind of, that's an ambiance, right?
Right.
It's a whole.
Right.
When I go to the Cellar, for example, again, the Cellar.
Right. Where we talked about the other night. You and I have been doing stand-up. How long have you been doing it? 20 years?
20, yeah, sorry. 22.
I've been doing like 25 years or more. But yet you go to that club and somehow you can do a set and you get off. You're like, holy, do I know how to do this?
I was so happy when I heard you said that because you're like, you know, you're who you are and you do stand up for 25 years. And when you said that, I was like, oh man, that's great to hear that. Like, oh, I can feel really, really like, ugh, like a beginner. Like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I think I bummed. I just bummed. And again, because the Cellar, it's a very strange and radical, I love it, audience. It's either you got a laugh, a real laugh, feel it, hear it,
right.
Or nothing.
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 And you're like, not even the, how you say, heckle, a little huckle,
a chuckle.
Yeah, chuckle.
Nothing.
No.
Yeah.
We have chuckle in Europe.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's like, oh, I know what you want to say,
polite.
But it's not funny.
Yeah.
No, in New York, at the Cellar.
Oh, just leave you hanging there.
There's nothing.
All alone up there. No, friends.
That's why when I go up, I'm like, I'm going with my strong bits, you know?
Oh, yeah, you got it with the Cellar. It's not a workout room.
No, that's what I told you last night. Like, when someone was telling me, are you trying new things tonight? No. I'm doing old great things to look good and feel like I'm good.
So when you go from Montreal and you get to France and you decide you're going to put together a show.
Yeah.
So you get, where do you get booked for something like that?
Small theaters.
Okay.
Very small, get a production, taking care of everything, going on tour.
So really, you know, when you go, it's not just sort of like you show up and do the set. You got to book a theater.
Yeah.
You got to get a stage manager.
Yeah.
Got to get some producer
and
involved.
And you stay there 6 months every night, like five nights a week. This is how we do it over there.
And that's how you build your act.
Yeah. And then TV guys come to see you, radio guys and media, and they get interested or not in your thing. In your
act. It's really more of it's more like a theater production.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So what was the first show? What did it include? Now that you've watched your French, the French comedy in Montreal. So when you decide I'm going
to... No, I was a little boo-boo-ba-ba in the beginning.
There's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's okay. The boo-boo-ba-ba.
I'm sure you do a little bit of that now. A little bit.
Sometimes.
A little bit.
You saw it in the show. I don't do it at the Cellar. If you want to see me do the boo-boo-ba-ba...
You got to see it in French.
No, yeah. I won't do the boo-boo-ba-ba like at... at Carnegie Hall. No, I will do only sharp, efficient, radical, straight.
But no, I'm strong. Just saying that you like there. Like I have nothing against you know. I'm not being dismissive, but I'm just saying that the actual theatricality.
Yeah.
Of what I notice in you know what I assume is you see it here too with Latino television and stuff that there is a broader performance
but I would say
style.
LA comics are more boo boo ba ba
sometimes
than New York.
There's a variety. Yeah, you got a little more room on the stage here, but yeah, no, it depends who it is. But I'm just saying, generally speaking, the theatrical element of comedy in French comedy is a big part of it.
Yeah,
it's just a tradition. It's not you know it's not like some bad thing.
No, I understand that.
And also, I think with Middle Eastern comedy, when I see like you know Persian acts or people that come from an expressive, it's not heady, it's not thinky.
Thinky, but it's also like there's a guy I really like, Sebastian Maniscalco.
I love that guy. Yeah, Sebastian.
He's very funny. He's hilarious. When I watch him, he's very physical.
Oh no, he's very physical and it's very specific.
But it's not boo boo baba.
No. It's a character.
Character.
Yeah.
And it helps to.
Yeah, you know? He's got a very weird way about him. It's very unique. Yeah. I like that guy. Where'd you see him?
I saw him live in Boston, and I watch his stuff on the internet. I really like his work.
Because he's an LA guy. He calls a comedy store a lot. Okay. Yeah. I don't know where he's at. He's a good guy. He is a very specific thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it's his thing.
Yeah. Sometimes he does things with your body language.
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, he does a thing. Right.
I like it.
But I think that, you know, I guess generalizing the boo boo ba ba is that there is a, and you did it in your show.
Yeah.
And it's just by virtue of where you come from. It's not a bad thing.
I get it.
It's just like, you know, even when you say, when you do the bit about when you ask a French person for directions, the singing thing, that there is obviously a type of French character that's very familiar.
Yeah.
Not unlike, you know, we have characters here. You got your New York character, you got your Southern character. You know, you got your hippie character, whatever.
It's always a question of perspective, right?
Right.
For example, when a comic goes on stage in France with holding a mic.
Yeah.
And if he has a wire.
Yeah.
We're going to be like, this guy has no money.
Yeah.
The production is so poor. He has no manager.
They
cannot even afford a headset a love thing on his clothes. Poor guy, he's really struggling. But here in America, if you show up with the headset.
You're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Who's this guy? Is he a magician? What is he? Is he a Vegas Cirque du Soleil? Some I don't know.
Well, that's a relatively new thing. It's a new phenomenon. The headset. It's within the last decade.
Yeah.
But if I go on the road, I prefer a wire. I don't like wireless mics. They're too big. They don't fit in the thing right. You're always struggling to get them back in the goddamn holder. And the lavalier thing. I'm always worried about it. And if I go on the road, I'm like, I want a fucking 58 with a wire.
Sure
58. Yeah.
The SM58.
Yeah. With a wire.
Why the wire?
Because I want to feel like I'm connected to something. I don't like...
I think that's the best conversation between comedians is about the microphone.
No, a 58 on a stick with a wire. That's what I want. I want a fucking stand like this thing here.
Yeah, so the stool, right?
No, just a mic stand. I want a straight stand.
The stand with the round base.
That's right.
No, I need that.
No. Music.
Arm,
the tripod, the three.
No.
Yeah, it's going to fuck you up.
Oh, man. If I see a tripod thing.
No, you can't.
I don't go.
Yeah, because you're going to wrestle with it. It's going to cause you trouble. At some point,
but the wire, I don't get it. Why the wire?
For me, the wire, it's just that they haven't made a cordless mic that feels right to me because they're too fat and the clip is always fucked up. It's like always getting it in and out of the clip is always a little more of a trouble than you just slide it in with the wire. You just slide it in. It's a nice little, it's the right size. And the fucking mic would know the one, and then I don't trust it.
Yeah.
I don't trust it.
Yeah.
I think it sounds weird. But this is, you know, this is just the preference.
Yeah, but if you're going to be moving around on the stage and doing some...
I get it.
The boo boo baba thing.
You need
wireless maybe.
I get it. You're playing big rooms. You don't have to rub it in. You're playing big places.
Yeah, big places.
Yeah.
Big
okay, so
places
let's
in
talk
Europe
about
and Middle East also. And,
right.
I don't know.
Do you do the act in Hebrew?
I did. I put some Hebrew stuff in my act when I played my shows in theaters in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem in French.
Yeah.
because there's a very big French community there. So yeah. I've done shows, and I put some Hebrew because I told you I speak Hebrew, and also Europe, you know. But also there's something interesting. I did a lot of shows. I started to do shows in America in French mm-hmm. for the French communities yeah. everywhere.
Yeah.
This is how I started.
How many years ago?
Well, like 3 years ago. And then I was putting here and there some English to try, yeah. you know.
And how'd that
then
go?
It was, in the beginning, it was hard. And then, you know, I felt more confident. And now I do all in English, you know. I was not able to do what I'm doing right now with you today
yeah.
2 years ago.
Right.
I was studying English every day for 2 hours with a teacher.
Yeah.
This is very hard.
Yeah, I imagine. But the first show, so you come from Montreal, you can do your 6 month run to build the hour. What is that hour? So like,
it's about my story. Born in Morocco, and then going to the drama, the acting school, and I talk about the my first experiences on the.
It's a one man show.
What exactly?
And is there
it's
music?
No stand up.
Is there music?
Music, one man show.
So you play some piano?
No, not at this. No, I play some guitar on the second
singing,
show.
Singing.
Yeah. Impressions. Uh-huh. Totally boo boo baba. Totally boo boo. Ladies and gentlemen, boo boo baba is.
Boo 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 baba.
Oh, the beautiful boy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Arrête, stop. No, but no, man.
But it's still a one man show, which is I think the difference in. You know, American stand-up really integrating into Europe, that was the difference. That most of it, early on, like Edinburgh style, you know, you do an hour that has a theme, that has a story, and it's not, you know, it's not about jokes necessarily, it's about the story.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then my second show, so that was my first show, one-man show. Yeah. Second show was more characters, and my third show, I was watching.
Now, this is a year you put in these shows. You do a show, you're in that show for a year.
No, for 3 years, for 2 years. Yeah, I go yeah. on tour and I travel. And then I started to watch all those guys, and especially Jerry.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I'm connected. This is what I want to do. My observations, it's always, I feel connected to this kind of writing and right. taking small things and making them big.
Well, that's because once you establish, not unlike a lot of us do in a different way, you know, you're comfortable with who you are on stage because you fucking talked about it. So like, you know, you now found where you live up there, and yeah. now you have a point of view from telling your story. Now you want to take that point of view and apply it to the world and not to yourself.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like,
for example, I do material now in America about, oh, I'm from France, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But I hope in 1-2 years from now, I will not talk anymore about, oh, because my French perspective.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
you
yeah.
say that word.
Right.
I just want to be a comedian.
Right.
Just a funny guy.
Right.
Oh, yeah, he's from France. I don't care. I just want to be a funny man.
Right, right. Well, so you are a funny man.
Okay.
You're already a funny man.
All right.
But you've taken on this.
You give me the visa, right?
You need a visa?
For a funny man. Like, right. There's a stamp. Boom. You're
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, funny visa.
Oh, you're
funny.
Want to hear a very funny story, by the way. I mean, not funny, but strange.
What?
With Jerry Seinfeld yeah. that happened in Cannes.
Yeah. In Cannes.
In Cannes Film Festival.
You were both at the Cannes Film Festival. Yeah. So wait, before we get to the Jerry story, which I'll make note of because I'm a professional, is that...
but there's no assistant. There's no people with cards showing you what to do.
No.
Nothing.
No.
I'm
riding the knobs right here with the levels. I'm watching your voice. This is how this works. So you did go to acting school, though.
Yeah.
For how long?
Paris.
The whole thing?
For 2 years.
That was the whole time?
They gave me a scholarship, by the way.
Which from the Montreal great. School?
No, from the Paris school.
Oh, you auditioned?
Audition, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was great because I worked for the whole summer in a hospital in Montreal to pay my school and everything. Mm-hmm. I got there and I do the audition at school and they give me the scholarship. So
wow.
I have extra money.
Okay. And what do you learn? You learn all the basics?
Basics. Yeah. From Molière to Shakespeare and Alfred de Musset and, you know, and Tennessee Williams and Eugene O'Neill and new guys and yeah. Israel Horovitz and I, you know.
Oh, yeah, you did Indian Wants the Bronx?
Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah.
I love this play.
Okay, so you're doing all that. You're doing scenes, you're doing plays, you're doing...
Plays, you know. Some little, you know, scenes from plays. Mostly comedy. I like comedy. So obviously those teachers are like, no, we're going to give you.
But that was the template. That's how you thought. You thought when you entered your own show that you do a theatrical show. That makes sense.
Yeah. But, okay. You know, I had no interest in, I don't know. I just wanted to be funny and do funny things and do my shows, you know?
Yeah. But it helped, right?
Yeah. I mean, they offered me to do movies. So I did a lot of movies in France.
You did?
A lot. Yeah, yeah.
Are you a star in the movies in France?
I starred in movies. Yeah, like a first lead role for in, I don't know, 20 movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, French movies. So yeah.
You're a big star.
Yeah, this is why. What? Yeah, Boo Boo Baba.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, but the movies, they're not Boo Boo Baba.
I know, but
they're
like,
they're painful romantic comedies.
Painful, man.
Yeah,
it's very hard to do movies. I don't want to do. I did movies here in America, small roles with very big directors. It was great experiences, you know, with Woody Allen, with Steven Spielberg.
And what'd you do with Woody Allen?
Midnight in Paris.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I love that movie.
The detective at the end of the movie, very funny scenes.
I gotta go back and look. Yeah, yeah. And what'd you do with
Tintin?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Tintin.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, you know. Here, I was also in a movie with Adam Sandler and Al Pacino. obviously, they gave me the French chef to play in Jack
what
and
movie?
Jill.
Oh, Jack and Jill.
Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
A crazy movie and. But I was, you know, I was happy to meet with Al Pacino, and he came to see my show in New York at Joe's Pub.
Show?
This show right now that I'm doing now, and I went to see his play. But I'm not, I think movies are not for comedians. You know, our pacing, our way of thinking, that's not for us. This is not the way we think and the way
Right, but it's just
a
thing.
I respect,
that
you know.
You can do it, though. The thing is like if you separate it, this is not my thing. This is me playing this character. It's exciting. I'm in the movies. But you're already tired of it. You do 20 movies, you know, in France.
I've done that.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so here's where we're at now. And we'll get to the Jerry story. So you tour around the world. You're very successful. You probably live in a nice house. I met your son. So you have a couple of sets of kids, couple of marriages.
Yeah.
Right? and you're good. You're good. I mean, you're a fucking star.
Yeah.
But there's some part of you that somewhere in you, you're like, oh, I got America. Yeah. I got, what the fuck is that about?
The fuck is, I think there's two things. There is the American thing, but there's also the personal and deep and very personal thing about challenging myself. I say it as a joke in my show.
You do.
But because I make fun of Americans about challenge.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Passion project.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not totally true that it's a joke because it's great to step out of this, you know, to go out of this comfort zone, to take risk.
Is there some part of your brain that no matter how big your success is internationally, that if you can't make it as a comedian in America, you haven't made it?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
This is what I think.
I'm sorry. You create a hell of a challenge for yourself.
Yeah, this is a big challenge. By the way,
So what is this Jerry story?
That's funny. There's two stories about Jerry. The first one is he made fun of me. He used to make fun of me. Like, why do you want to come here to America to do comedy?
Where'd you meet him?
It's like, so in Cannes.
Why is he in Cannes? Why are you in Cannes?
To promote the B movie. So animated movie.
Oh, okay.
He wrote and they produced with Steven Spielberg. And he did the voice of this B thing there. Yeah. And then, so we were supposed to be on the same talk show.
Yeah.
So I'm invited on the show and he's invited and we're going to be on the same show. And the producer of the show says, okay, you're a big fan. Do you want to meet with him? I say, yes, of course. I want to meet with
your idol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there in a hotel room. It's a mess. It's a fuss.
Yeah.
It's crazy. People running all around. The publicists and Americans are loud. And
big fuss.
Big fuss.
About Jerry.
And then Jerry walks into the room. There are like 12 people sitting there, me, my friends, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I swear, and I'm not making that up, and he said he was honest about that. He never saw me before.
Yeah.
So he point to me like that. Point at me or point to me?
Yeah, he point at you.
He point at me.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you're the funny guy.
Yeah. And he didn't know that.
Never. So I said, what? Oh, you Googled me, I said.
Yeah.
He said, no, never. And I said, so how do you know I'm the funny guy? He said, because in a room, you know who's the funny guy. I said, what do you mean? Because there's always one funny guy. There's not two. And you are the funny guy.
Yeah.
It's like when he said, I saw your material in French. It's good. I said, you don't speak French. He said, funny is funny. That's flattering. But
yeah.
So the story is one day we were sitting at the Cellar and Jerry was
But what
like,
happened in Cannes? Did you guys talk? Did you hang
out?
Yeah,
of course. We did the show and then he offered me to do this the French version of the B-movie. So I made the French voice of B-movie. I did also Despicable Me, right? Yeah. The Steve Carell movie. Yeah. I did it in France. Yeah. So then we, you know, I go, I see his show on tour and he comes to Paris. And, you know, one day we organized something where he performed in English in Paris and we become friends, you know? And he comes to see my shows in New York City. And by the way, when he offered me to I'm going to open for him.
Oh, yeah.
And as a joke, I said, so you have to open for me too.
Yeah.
He said, yeah.
Oh.
I said, when? He said, Thursday. Do you have a show on Thursday? I said, sure. So there's this guy who is supposed to open for me every night, Harrison Greenbaum.
Yeah.
New York comic.
Yeah.
I say, Harrison, you're going to do it, but you're going to do a 2-minute warm up.
Yeah.
And you're going to bring up Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
He said, is this a joke or what? No.
Yeah.
Because Jerry's going to open. And so then he said, ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Seinfeld. The audience thought it was like a joke.
Right.
They didn't even do what? And then when he showed up, like, ah!
Right.
Bananas, as you guys said, right? They went bananas.
Sure, yeah.
I like this expression.
Okay, yeah.
So, and then I did my show.
Well, how'd that go for you after Jerry?
Bananas.
Yeah? Oh, it was good.
No.
No good.
No, it was good. It was good. He made fun of me.
Right.
He said to the crowd, oh, because he said to someone, how do you know, where are you from? You're French. So the woman said, first of all, she said, no, I'm American.
Yeah.
So he says, so how did you hear about this guy? You just saw him on the top of the cabs because I had a whole ads on, and you said, oh, this guy is funny. Because
and this is at Joe's Pub?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's on the top of a New York cab.
Yeah.
She said, no, I read in the New York Times something about him. And he said, what did you read? She said, I read he's the Jerry Seinfeld of France. And then he said, oh, so you came to see a shitty version of me.
Oh, boy.
But it's okay.
He did 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And is that going to be the last time you have the biggest name in American comedy open for you?
It's not open for me.
Not now? Not now.
It's not open. I love
him. He did a guest spot.
Yeah. Oh, guest spot. So not paid, right? Right. That's the whole difference.
I guess that's true. No, but probably true, right? You didn't pay him, did you?
No.
Uh-huh. No. That's nice of him. But but you didn't have any problem following?
No, ba-ba-boo-boo. No, during that night, right?
Right. So those are your experiences with Jerry. So Jerry's sort of like you become friends and he's supportive of you here. And that's a nice thing.
Yeah, we talk a lot. And how does it go? Because it went very, how you say that, organic.
Well, yeah.
The way I got here.
Well, you were here and I'd heard about you and Gottfried, who I like.
Because I have to say that. It's not to, we have an expression in France.
What is it?
It's called, if I translate literally.
I want to hear it in French.
Je ne veux pas te passer de la pommade, passer de la pommade means I don't want to rub you with cream.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, when I say I'm going to go do Marc Maron, blah, 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 people are, you know, they're like, oh, real? That's big. That's really big. That's huge. That's huge. Oh, it's great. Oh, my God. Okay. And then some people, they say it's even more important than TV, blah, blah, blah. They have a whole thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I'm telling you this. Yeah. So for me,
The way it worked
with us.
I heard
of you, with us, right. Because we have a friend in common, right?
Well, no,
we know a guy.
Well, you have a friend in common, but also, like, you know, it seems like an interesting story. It's not a story that I've
But I'm glad that you get interested, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's very good to do that, because you could have said, people don't know him.
Yeah.
Ah.
Well, it wasn't like my first impression, to be honest. Like I said to you before, like I didn't know what to make of you, and like, you know, I heard about you, and then I met you at the Cellar, and you know, I'm judged or whatever based on nothing. But like until like when I went to see you at Largo, because I have a little time now because I'm not shooting the TV show, I'm like, I should go, you know, like watch this guy.
That's great,
And then like when I talked to you afterwards, like, and then I realized, like, no, he's a comedian, you know. So like I like being able to do this. I like, you know,
it's
like
great.
It's easy for me. I live down the street. You're not here for that long.
That's
and after
great.
I saw you, I'm like, just come over and do
I've never done something that way, you know?
Oh, yeah.
No, neither in France or...
You got the big... Jerry it's called all, the posse. There's a lot
no,
of people.
No, 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 no. Jerry's my, he's my friend. It's, right. It's easy.
But he's making fun of you traveling with people.
Yeah, yeah, because the entourage. Yeah,
yeah,
right?
The entourage.
No, but
yeah.
If you go on a TV talk show here right. in America or in France, even radio or something, yeah. it's going to be the whole, you know, the yeah. publicist and the assistant. I love that.
Yeah.
I still didn't believe when I came in front
of my house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came in front. No, that can mean another thing.
Yeah. You didn't do that. I would have noticed that. But
when I came into your house.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's fine.
It sounds a little bit sexual.
Yeah, when but you're not going to come into the house. I'm like, don't flatter yourself. Just like when I.
All over the house.
My French cock. Yeah. It just I entered the house with my cock first.
Beep, to make sure. Bleep.
No, there's no bleeping on
there's
this.
There's no bleep. So when I arrived,
yes,
I was like, it's like, is this real? Is this like this?
Is
guy?
This real? The thing with the publicists and the assistants and the being ushered in. Do you want coffee, Mr. French guy? All that shit. That you're gonna ask if this is real? I made the fucking coffee right there.
Yeah,
I give you the coffee.
That's great. The cat.
Yeah, the cat.
The lonely. The
yeah, the house. Yeah, I know.
Silence.
Yeah, it's nice.
The neighbor.
Yeah, the neighbor's over there.
Nice guys. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. This is how this show is business
the,
works here.
No, this is the American dream.
It is the American dream.
American way of life.
Yeah. But so this challenge that you've given yourself, so what's the hope that you build a following here of not necessarily French expats?
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah.
That's how's that hope. Going? What's going on with the Joe's Pub Show? What do you find?
Yeah, I get a lot of Americans now because Joe's Pub is a very small venue. I hang out after the show at the venue, which I never do in Europe. Yeah,
right.
I cannot.
Right,
because
huge.
Because it's arena.
900 people.
It's, I don't know, it's 12,000 yeah. people, arena in Belgium. You don't hang out in front of the venue, mm-hmm, you know? It's mm-hmm. parking lot. And
see, that's another difference is that like now you're learning how to do intimate comedy.
I love it.
Yeah, well, that's where it happens.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I hang out there and every night... I'm surprised and I'm very happy to meet with the Americans who come to my show because they read something about me because they've been brought by some French guys who want them.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's a French guy dating American girls.
Sure. So the French guy brings him and the American likes the show and the French guy goes, you should see him in French.
No, and the French comedian goes with the girl, mm-hmm. with the American girl.
Yeah, oh yeah? That's it. You get the girl.
No, I mean... It's a mixed crowd. A lot of expats from different countries also. I'm always surprised because I have nothing to do maybe or related to Armenia, Iran, Australia, Brits. And they come to my show because they relate.
To the experience.
Yeah, the experience. Yeah. This is very funny. I was talking to, I think when you were here or the night before with the girl from Argentina.
Uh-huh.
She was like, oh, this is, I feel everything you said, I feel about when I first moved to America. They relate as a foreigner.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an immigrant experience.
Yeah, immigrant mm-hmm. experience. So obviously, of course.
That's interesting because that's a good angle.
Yeah.
So you're going to attract international audiences in America.
Yeah, so I should perform in Times Square.
Sure. Well, you do. Close.
Close.
Down the street.
Down the street.
Not far. But
no,
that,
it's
but
downtown.
That's, but that speaks a lot to the cultural landscape of America at this time. You know, that there is, that you are being sought out by people, that the immigrant experience or the transition into becoming an American or living in America is something common with a lot of people.
Yeah, but let's not underestimate
I'm not
how,
saying your jokes
no,
aren't.
No, how Americans also hear that story as a new thing and perspective.
Right.
I was really amazed by some comments they say about my, they don't know maybe about my story about Morocco, whatever, friends, whatever, but they're very, they connect to the story and it's, I love that. This is the best compliment I can get when I.
What's the other side?
Walk out.
It's the other side, you know. Americans like they have a not necessarily an arrogance, but they have a, it's not even entitlement. It's just that we assume a certain thing about America, and that we don't necessarily empathize, you know, with what the immigrant experience is. So like to hear your frustrations for an American, it's sort of like, oh my God, that guy was going through
it's
that.
It's refreshing.
I just said, hi, how you doing? And he looked like he was in panic. And now I get why. It's because he didn't know how to react. You know, so you're giving the other side of that. It helps us be more empathetic.
But also a culture with comedy and a sense of it who is that is very, very strong with Americans. Really, I was surprised. In the beginning, like I was, oh, can I do that big? I do. The self-deprecating is in the American culture.
Yeah.
It's very, very present.
As a comedian.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, even the audience.
In general,
I mean, they know.
Right.
They know really well. Yeah. They know what this is. They go to the club. They sit there and they know there are comedians. They know how more than Europe.
Yeah. We think about ourselves a lot here.
Yeah. And but the self-deprecating thing is well accepted by Americans, and I like that because
the underdog.
It's a culture. It's a culture, you know.
Yeah.
So again, going back to your friend Jerry.
Yeah.
When I told him I was going to do comedy, he was like, "Why would you do this in English?" Okay, here is
really he said that.
Yeah, because he was making fun of me.
And this
you know?
Is a guy that can't understand your acting French. So he all he knows is that you're a funny guy and he likes you. But
he saw my jokes in English and he gave me the best advice.
What did he say?
On earth?
He said, "Why are you going to do this in English?"
The best, right?
Yeah.
No,
sure.
He was like in the beginning was making fun of me, but because I shot a documentary about doing stand-up in English, it was called 10 Minutes in America. I was building my 10 minutes. And so I did interviews with Sarah Silverman, Woody Allen, and Jerry and other comedians. And Jerry was, as a joke, making fun of me. He said, "Oh, you're going to come to America and do, but this is America. They know, I mean, it's like, okay, it's like if I go to Germany and I say I'm going to start to build cars and then I go to Italy and I'm going to do pasta factory. I'm going to start a pasta factory.
Wow.
And then I go to France and I'm going to start a new kind of baguette.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go to America and do stand-up comedy."
Yeah. I don't think that's right.
Me too.
It's a little off as a metaphor because comedy, humor, laughing is an international human thing.
Yeah.
And
but it was just making fun of
me. No, it's style.
Because,
style. Yeah, it's an American thing. Like, why would you do that to yourself? I guess the concern really, and the concern for me too, in watching it is that, your observations are good and your structure is good and your performances is all good. But I think what you're up against is that, you have to have the point of view that you have right now because that's showing you how to use English and do the jokes. But I think what Jerry might be saying is that, do you have more creative range in your own language?
Oh.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That there's something challenging and endearing and about your struggle with English and your struggle as somebody who is here. Yeah. But can you express yourself to the best of your ability better in French?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the tricky thing.
Yeah. But this is, again, part of this crazy challenge.
Right.
This is why I told you I would like in a few months, few weeks, talk about different things, not only.
And you will. That was because that struck me in the show today, the way you're writing and the joke structure, because Jerry's very much a technician. And, even when you had the callback with the I'm down.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good, right.
Yeah.
It's very clever, and I come back around. Now, is that a device you use in France as well?
No.
Right, exactly. That's
I learned that in America.
I noticed.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. I said, well, that's good that, he's understanding the structure.
That's funny because I'm working now with a French comedian on a project in France.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be doing in a few months. And my vision changed totally.
Right. About writing.
Yeah. So they're writing me back, "Oh, why are you so exigeant?" How you say? How you say exigeant, like very hard on what we're doing, why don't you just, that's a good joke.
Yeah.
I said, no.
Be better, right.
We
right.
need to get it sharp and clear and sweet and boom.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, that's great. It's very long setups.
Yeah.
Those emails are very long.
Yeah.
And I cut the fat. Boom, boom, boom. I cut all the fat and I send them back. I say, that will work like this. Boom.
Yeah.
Three lines.
Yeah.
One setup, a joke.
Do they agree?
Yeah, but it's a little bit,
there's not enough. Boom, 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 ba, ba. Where's
we
the
had to boom, 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 yeah. But we have to mix those two cultures,
sure,
right?
Sure.
The boom, boom, ba, ba can be fun,
Yeah.
But if you only do the boom, boom, ba, ba,
could be better. The joke could be better.
Yeah.
You get away with
but
something.
But I like a good joke.
Sure. Because the boom, boom, ba, ba, it's a lot of charm. It's a lot of charm.
Seduction.
Yes.
You can do boo boo baba even with no jokes.
That's exactly right. Just a little,
nice suit.
Yeah.
Nice suit, music, good lighting.
Sure, character
boom,
driven.
And boo boo baba.
Yeah.
No, come on.
Let's make a better joke. Well, that's interesting.
You know, that's,
So you're going to change French stand-up. A lot of guys that were getting away with it.
No, we brought, not only me, but we kind of brought this way of doing comedy in France, stand-up, talking directly to the audience, not with an imaginary third wall?
No, yeah, fourth wall.
Fourth wall. We brought this with Jamel, this other guy in France. So now we got to go one step further. We have to stand up. We have to be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I go see some shows in Europe, not only in France, and there are like 4 minutes with no laughs.
Mm.
Set up and theatrical. It's okay. It's fun. They do it very well. The thing moves. The music, the life.
Yeah.
But now that I'm here, I don't know. I kind
efficient,
of change my... Yeah, I want the joke. I want to laugh.
And that's also interesting to me that you're going to like to integrate that into a tradition of entertainment. That it's what you're really up
also
against.
Also short sets. Sometimes I go to Europe and I see shows, 2 hours of comedy, two hours.
Right.
That's too much. You cannot be funny for 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Even if you're a genius, you cannot.
Yeah. Right. So, but that's interesting that, you know, that you're really up against different expectations. Like maybe a French audience doesn't know that this could be better because they've gotten so used to here's the music, here's the guy in
but
the
it's exactly like the American audience.
No, I think it's good.
They don't know that maybe with a little physicality would be crazy.
No, that's
when
right.
I do it sometimes, even at the Cellar sometimes or other clubs, I put a little expressions. They like it.
Of course. Well, it's a natural thing. That's not necessarily French, but there's a way of doing it that you're used to that. I think your muscle around physicality is it has to do with you know that's what you do, you know, so like when you trim it when you make it more efficient, because I noticed that right when you started doing physical, I'm like that, like he, you're very comfortable doing that, you know what I mean?
We're having a real conversation right now. It's great,
right? That's what I do.
Never happens.
No,
on the radio.
Yeah, well, that's the podcast.
That's the podcast.
That's different.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm excited about that. I like the idea of that, of like, you know, working within this tradition of comedy in France, and then you bringing this new skill set to it and kind of changing the face of French comedy while you learn how to do American
Because you want me
style.
To go back there. That's why. I understand.
I'm not exactly saying that, but...
I love that you came here to take some great ideas and go back to your country use them over there.
Well, I think that was Jerry's point when he said, I don't go to Italy and make pasta.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. But you know, he's indulging you and it's nice.
No, I mean, he's right when he talks about how New Yorkers are so aware of they know this, the stand-up. This is where stand-up was born, you know, in America, in New York City. Does. So obviously he's very... sarcastic, but also it's true.
But he comes from that tradition. But I think what you're doing, and it's not by me saying that I want to, you know, send you back to France. I just think it's exciting that you take a form, which is not unlike jazz, which has a lot of roots, you know, and integrates a lot of things, that you're conscious enough to know, you know, the difference between, you know, what has become not necessarily stale, but expected in France. And you say, well, why don't we integrate, you know, what I'm learning here into trying it there and seeing, you know, what happens, you know, making a different expectation. Like it might be surprising. Like there's actually this opportunity to take a form that's very, you know, I'll say traditional in terms of how entertainment works, but taking these new skills and just seeing like how that joke works now. Have you seen the results yet?
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And is it working?
Oh, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't know why. They don't know.
Oh, it's great. That's exciting. That's a very exciting thing.
It's great. You know, it's like, I don't know. I was thinking about analogy, but it's not a good one. I was thinking about a sexual analogy.
Yeah.
Like you took something and you're very performant, and, yeah. But she doesn't know.
Right,
know?
Right. That you've been with another woman learning new things. I get
or
it.
Or having so many pills.
Yeah, yeah.
And she had no idea. Yeah, yeah. Just think.
Don't tell her you took the pills. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What happened to you? I don't know.
I don't know. It's you.
It's you, baby.
But what, yeah, yeah. But my question to you is the opposite would be true? Like, would you go, you or another comedian, go to Boo Boo Baba Land?
I do more now.
And would watch something and
we have our own version of that.
Inspired.
No, we have our own version of that, and it's not. And it's like it's not the same in that, you know, whatever we're calling Boo Boo Baba is really just the way French comedy has worked for years. That's all. And we have, you know, there are certain types of comedy that have existed here for years, but lately for me, I've become a little more lighthearted. Like, I open up a little more, and I'm very envious of natural physical comedians. I know that I have the ability, but I don't have the comfort, and I do it a little more now, and that's something I'm consciously doing, but I don't think of it as Boo Boo Baba, but I think of it as like, why not be a little more physical? Try it. You know, you have the skill.
Yeah, but you have a character. I saw you on stage. Yeah. It's not, we don't expect that from you.
Right. Well, that's why I like to do it now.
Oh,
like
I do. You're challenging yourself.
Sure. And I'm challenging to take those risks. And I mean, if you saw me in another environment, like tonight, I'm going to do the Comedy Store, you know, where I'm doing these newer bits where, you know, I do physical stuff. In my last special, I'm a lot more physical, but I'm aware of it. Like, I know that's instead of looking at it as something like that indicates a certain side, we're sort of making fun of it. It's just another way of another tool. It's yeah. another way of doing what you do. You integrate these different things, and you know you want to best be funny and make it fun for you.
I like to hear that.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. I'm kind of a dick initially, but I get it. Like, because like for me to be watching you and actually be craving, you know, in a genuine way to see, you know, you perform in all French, just to experience that. To see what, you know, that, you know, what yeah. you're the most comfortable with was not to go like, oh, look at this fucking clown. It was to see like, you know, you're a good comedian. I'd love to see, because I never see French comedy. I make fun of it. I don't know anything about
but
it.
But I want to go back.
Which is American.
I want to go back on I'm a dick. You said I'm a dick.
Yeah.
Because no one else than someone who doesn't speak English can picture better this expression. Because what we do immediately is we translate.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys, it's an expression, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a dick.
Yeah.
But because we know what the word dick means.
Yeah.
And we don't speak English.
Oh,
you don't know the expression.
What
we have to say, oh, all right. Oh, he's talking. So we translate. And we're like, oh, he's talking about penis, and then he's a penis, and he's a penis.
But it was never going to make sense.
So never going
to
make sense.
How you would
but
have
I
to
like
translate
that.
It
but
is
one,
that
yeah,
was, how it would be more like he's a judgmental, ignorant American that does not allow himself to experience different things. Because
that's
he's
a dick.
Because he's
that's
stubborn. Because he's
that's,
stubborn.
That's a dick.
To you, it would be a dick.
Wow.
To me, it would just be like, yeah, I'd be talking to a guy, I'd be like, yeah, I don't fucking like that shit either.
That's a bit. No, that's a bit for you. That's
okay.
A bit for your...
You're probably right. I need new bits. I'll listen back to it.
Yeah, listen only that part. Who signed this? Hey, Mark.
Iggy Pop.
Oh, well, he came here.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people come here. All right, so let's wrap it up.
Wrap it up. So
we did good.
We're going to wrap it up. Good expression also, because I see the...
No, how would that translate to French?
We don't have this.
Well, what's the expression where
c'est
you say...
C'est fini. It's finished.
Oh, yeah, c'est fini.
C'est fini.
Right.
Merci beaucoup.
Yeah.
Ça m'a fait très plaisir d'être avec toi aujourd'hui.
Uh-huh.
You know what marron means in French?
Brown, chestnut and brown.
No.
Okay.
Two things.
I hope they're good things.
There's one who's not a good thing. Which is, marron means brown.
Yeah.
But marron, if I say we are marron, means fucked up.
Yeah.
Like if someone says, oh man, where's the car? You didn't bring the car? And it starts in, we are marron.
Uh-huh.
We are marron means we're fucked up.
That's,
we're fucked.
That's more fitting.
Than brown?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. That was lovely. That guy's a lovely man. I didn't know if I had time to play guitar, but I think I might.
Boomer lives.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.